So who can stop the Lord Almighty? No one. No one. Not the lion and the lamb. When the prophet Isaiah was speaking, called by God to speak, he addressed that issue. He addressed it in powerful ways, speaking the words that God had given him to speak. And as you hear these words of Isaiah, these words that come to us from God's storyboard, I want you to envision the power and the impact of these words for the people of Isaiah's time, and the power and the purpose of these words for the people of our time, and see how they might translate into our context and how they are relevant for our lives today. And immediately thereafter, imagine what it might look like in our world today. The Spirit of the Sovereign Lord is on me, declared the prophet Isaiah, because the Lord has anointed me to preach good news to the poor. He has sent me to bind up the brokenhearted, to proclaim freedom for the captives, and release from darkness for the prisoners, to proclaim the year of the Lord's favor and the day of vengeance of our God, to comfort all who mourn and provide for those who grieve in Zion, to bestow on them a crown of beauty instead of ashes, the oil of gladness instead of mourning, and a garment of praise instead of a spirit of despair. Might these words look something like this? So maybe that's what God's words can look like when they're put into action. Feed the Need is next weekend over at North Central College, and Good Shepherd has been in the past and will be this year again a dominant force by God's grace and God's generosity and God's will. And so just out of curiosity, how many of you have already signed up to be part of Feed the Need, Feed My Seven Children next weekend over? I know it's President's Day weekend. Thank you so much. That's awesome. You're a part of almost 500 from Good Shepherd. In fact, over 500 now who have already signed up to be part of that. And you're going to make a difference in people's lives. How many of you are planning to sign up right after this worship service? How many? Yeah, there's opportunity. There's a way to sign up there online. There's a way to sign up in the Narthex. Lots of different opportunities, and you can do that. So I noticed that not every hand went up. And I get that. I mean, we're Napervillians. We're busy people. So I get that. And I trust, I really do, I trust that if you are not part of Feed the Need, Feed My Starving Children next weekend, you've got a really good reason for not doing that. I mean, it's got to be a really good reason if you would not sign up, when, in fact, by signing up, you can help feed starving children who will otherwise die without that food. But I get it. I do. I mean, a lot of these children, they live in countries all across the world, 70-some countries that we send those meals to. And most of us will probably never get to those countries. We'll probably never see those children anyway. And if they die, we'll never see them. Besides, what difference can any one person make? I mean, really. Well, let's just get down to the bottom line. What difference? Well, the Feed My Starving Children folks say that every single person who participates can help, whatever your role is, help prepare enough food to feed a child for 7.5 months. So that means if you participate, whatever your role is, you'll help feed a child from now till the end of September. But I get it. We're busy people. We're, in fact, really good people. We are. And we make really good decisions. And we know how to prioritize. And we know how to put our faith into action. And actions really do portray who we are, right? So I know that you're going to make very good decisions about how you spend your weekend next weekend. And if you're already signed up, thank you so much. You will make a difference. And if you're planning to sign up, bless you. Bless you for all the reasons, because children will not only receive food for their bodies, but they receive the gospel of Jesus Christ. So it's providing for their care right now and for all eternity. And if you're still not going to be part of it, I probably don't need to belabor the point, do I? After all, isn't this just one example of what Isaiah was talking about? Isn't it? Putting faith into action. Not only was he commanded by God to proclaim these words, he was called by God to equip others to put into action things like preaching good news to the poor with real tangible ways of doing that. It's been said that if a prophetic preacher is really doing his job or their job, then the audience will either hate the sin or they will hate the messenger. I'm pretty sure I don't want to take an opinion poll right now. I want to avoid all popularity polls right now. And it's also been said that the role of the prophet has been to comfort the afflicted and to afflict the comfortable. That was Isaiah's role. He did that for some 60 plus years. Do you know how long the Queen of England has now been queen? Do you know what the length of time is? 65 years. So the length of that time, if any of you have memories that span that kind of length, that's how long Isaiah was called upon to comfort the afflicted and to afflict the comfortable. And in his day, that was really important. Because, you see, the people were straying away from God. They were real comfortable with other religions. And he needed to afflict them and say, no, that you're out of sync with God when you do that. Yesterday, or last night, I should say, at our Saturday evening worship service, we had three baptisms. One of those was a baptism of a baby. One was a baptism of a three-year-old. And then there was a baptism of an adult. And when I asked Janelle, I said, Janelle, why now? She'd never been baptized. I said, why now? Why did you choose this time in your history to be baptized? And this is what she said, Pastor, now is the right time because I am finally ready to live the life that God had always planned for me. I'm finally ready to live the life that God had always planned for me. And that's what Isaiah was trying to do with the people of his day, trying to help them live the life that God had always planned for them. Some of you are aware that that I have a grandchild. Some of you are aware of that. And I don't have any pictures today. Sorry about that. But our little Remy turned 2 last weekend, and he's entering that stage in his life that some would call the terrible twos, although Shay and I haven't seen that in him. His parents might differ. I don't know. But I'm aware, are we not all aware, that if a parent is really doing their job, then you not only comfort the child when they need comforting, but you also discipline them when they need discipline, don't you? And if they don't get that kind of discipline, if you don't afflict the comfortable, then they lead a life that probably isn't helpful for them in the long run. And I got to tell you, it's so much fun. It's so much fun to watch our son Nathan and his wife Sarah now having to do the disciplining. Oh, there is a God. It's just a blast. Now, I got to tell you, I've got a confession to make. My confession is this. I really like the comforting the afflicted part. That's a part of my job that resonates with me. It's kind of a sweet spot. But I'll tell you, when called upon to afflict the comfortable, that's hard. That's really hard. I think it's hard for a parent to do a good job of that. I think it is. I think it's hard for us as Christians to proclaim that word and to live that word. But that's exactly what was happening in the life of Israel, the nation of Israel. They needed to be afflicted in their comfortable lifestyle because they were turning away from God. And they got to a point in their life where the kingdom became divided. So Israel became two parts. Israel actually was the name of the northern kingdom, and then the southern kingdom was Judah. And they got to a point in their life when at last God's patience with Israel is spent, and the northern kingdom falls. What happened was this. The northern kingdom, Israel, was ruled by a king by the name of Hoshea. And Hoshea was worshiping all kinds of other gods, and the people had become soft. They were comfortable, but they were really soft, spiritually speaking. And they had really diverted from God's plan. They were not living the kind of life that God had planned for them. And eventually they got to a point where Hoshea, trying to rely on his own cunning and not trusting in God, had formed an alliance with Assyria. Now, Assyria is not to be confused with Syria, the country we hear so much about in the news today. Assyria, with an A, was in a different location, different peoples, different age, different story altogether. But Assyria was a mighty nation, mighty. And in addition to Assyria was Babylon, a mighty nation. And to the south was Egypt, another mighty nation. There's little Israel, now a divided kingdom, north and south, Israel and Judah, but still one people in a way. And so the king of Israel, the northern kingdom, had formed this alliance. You can read about in 2 Kings chapter 17, he'd formed an alliance with the king of Assyria. And then when he got nervous, because now Egypt was getting closer and closer, and he was feeling threatened by Egypt, so unbeknownst to the king of Assyria, he formed a secret alliance with Egypt as well, diverting some of the treaty agreement resources from Assyria over to Egypt. When the king of Assyria found out about that, he was livid. And he finally brought the full wrath of his mighty empire down upon the northern kingdom of Israel. And Israel in the year 721 was totally destroyed in a way that they never recovered from. In fact, the nation of Israel never came back together again until 1948. They were totally wiped out. The people were brutally killed. Some of them skinned alive, some of them impaled on spears, others beheaded. And those who lived were hauled away with steel hooks put through their nose and led off into captivity. It was a brutal, barbaric time in the history of the world. And that's how the nation of Israel, the northern kingdom, fell. Meanwhile, in the southern kingdom, Judah, they were being governed by a king by the name of Hezekiah, a good king. In fact, in 2 Kings chapters 18 and 19, it says, there never was a king before or after Hezekiah. Not even King David was as devout as Hezekiah. Hezekiah totally trusted in God, even though times were tough and the battles were looming large in his life. He consulted with the prophet Isaiah, and Isaiah said, stay firm. Stay firm. God will deliver the victory. Trust in God. And against overwhelming odds, with these mighty nations surrounding him, the northern kingdom of Israel already defeated and hauled off into captivity, Hezekiah stayed firm. And when Assyria, like a lion, came down upon the lamb of Judah, it was Judah that became the lion. As the power of the Lord invaded the military camp of the Assyrians, and that night it records in 2 Kings chapters 18 and 19, that night the angel of death visited the Assyrian army military camp, and 185,000 Assyrian soldiers died. And Judah won the victory. And as long as Hezekiah was king, and as long as Israel, or rather Judah, I should say, stayed faithful to God, God delivered battle after battle, and they stayed strong. Unfortunately, the kings after Hezekiah were not as faithful. And this was the beginning of the end. You'll hear in the weeks to come about the end of the nation of Judah as well in 587. But all along the way, Isaiah the prophet had been afflicting the comfortable, trying to get them to turn back to God. And then when they were hauled off into captivity, his job was to comfort the afflicted, to tell them about how one day God would have a plan to restore them. One day, all of those who stayed strong in their faith, God would deliver. Ever had a moment in your life where you were riding the wave, things were going so well, only to be brought down low? I'm sure that's the way many of the wounded warriors feel, I should say. Wounded warriors are they're military personnel who have lost a limb, an arm or a leg, some other body part being injured, serving our country. Well, 2 weeks ago, I had an opportunity. Riding, it was like living the dream. An opportunity to play in a softball game in a professional softball complex. It had a pristine groomed field. Every blade of grass was identical height. The infield was so well groomed. It was just pristine. And there was a stadium, like a minor league stadium. It was a professional softball complex. And it's a great place to play ball. And I got an opportunity to play with a team when I was down in Florida that played against the Wounded Warrior All-Star team in Plant City Stadium, Plant City near Tampa Bay. These Wounded Warriors, mostly in their 20s and 30s, all had some kind of device. Many of them had blades for legs. You've seen them on the Olympics. Boy, those guys can really run. We found that out. And others had prostheses, you know, their arms. And boy, they had really learned how to use them well. They're great softball players, phenomenal softball players. And it was a great game. And it's like a dream come true to play with this phenomenal team against the Wounded Warriors All-Star team and this professional stadium. And when they found out that I was a pastor, they asked me if I'd do the invocation. So I got to go on the PA system and do this prayer for the whole thing. And that came right after the national anthem, which came right after they had called us out on the field. And they did it like you do it in an All-Star game. They called us out, each one, player by player. They would identify our position. I got to bat leadoff, so batting leadoff, playing right center field, from Chicago, Illinois, Gary Olson. And each one of us got introduced like that. It was like a dream come true. I never thought that would happen. So right after the national anthem, right after the military flyover, well, there wasn't really a military flyover. I just threw that in to see if any of you were still listening. But there was a national anthem, and they did call us out there, and then I did the invocation, and then they had a couple of other speeches from dignitaries, and then we went out and we played this game, and it was so much fun. It was just so much fun to be playing this caliber of softball in this setting. Well, the first couple of times I was lucky enough to get a couple of hits to right field, and so these guys are savvy softball players. They started pitching me differently. There's in slow pitch softball, there's supposed to be a 6-12 rule where you pitch has to be at least 6 foot high and can be no higher than 12 feet in the rules that we were playing by. And the pitcher started throwing the ball, I don't think it was higher than my knees, and just landing the front tip of home plate, and the umpire called it a strike. And I thought, well, that's not right. That's not a strike. So I looked at him and he smiled. Got back in the batter's box and the pitcher threw the same pitch, same kind of pitch, just barely above my knees, landed on the plate, and he called it a strike. And I stepped out of the box. I looked at him. He smiled at me. And I said, no arc rule tonight? He winked at me. And he said, not for you. Not tonight. I thought, oh, okay. So he threw the next pitch. It was so low. I tried to reach for it, and I hit it foul, which if you've got two strikes in slow pitch softball, that means you're out. So I thought, okay. that's the way they're going to play the game. Next time up, I thought, okay, I'm going to shoot the box, which in softball means I'm going to go right back up the middle. And the pitcher made a mistake. He threw the ball right down the middle of the plate. It was just so sweet. It was so sweet. And I hit the sweet spot of the bat. It's a line drive. It's just, it's the kind to dream of. Hit a line drive. It was the next thing I knew, though, after this line drive, it felt so good for just a nanosecond. I heard the crack of the bat and then a clank as the ball caromed off the prostheses of the pitcher. It hit his blade and caromed all the way over to third base. I immediately ran to the mound. Well, after I went to first base, of course. I wasn't going to fall for that ploy. So I went, I'm apologizing to the pitcher. I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry I hit your artificial leg. Sorry about that. I hit your blade. And he looked at me. I realized at that moment I was surrounded by the whole Wounded Warrior infield. They had all come in to check on me. And none of my teammates had come out at all. These are military vets who have served in Afghanistan and Iraq. And I'm surrounded by them, offering my feeble apology. He looked at me and he laughed. He said, "Hey, buddy, after what I've been through, that was nothing." Apology accepted. I'm just really ticked off I didn't get you out. So I went back to first base, and I was so totally embarrassed. I told the first baseman, I said, this is embarrassing. He said, "Hey, at least he didn't hit his good leg, you know." They offered me grace. They couldn't have been kinder. They were so gracious. My dream come true had de-escalated down into feeling really, really low. But like God, they were grace-filled. And we prayed after the game, and we had prayed before the game, and it was an incredible experience. You know, Israel was truly living the dream when they were in sync with God, when they were heeding God's warnings, when they were aware of God's judgments, when they believed God's promises of hope and experienced God's salvation. But the beginning of the end came into play when they relied on their own craftiness and treaties instead of relying on God, and they began to worship other gods, lacking trust. It was then that the prophet Isaiah had offered words of affliction to the comfortable. But after captivity, he offered words of comfort to the afflicted. He also pointed to that day when the ultimate prophet would come and deliver all peoples from whatever slavery in which we are engaged. And that we, like the prophet Isaiah, might be equipped to live out the words that God has given to his people. And so that day, many generations later, Jesus, while worshiping in the temple, stood up to preach. And the scroll of the prophet Isaiah was handed to him. Unrolling it, Jesus found the place where it is written, "The Spirit of the Lord is upon me, because he has anointed me to proclaim good news to the poor. He has sent me to proclaim freedom for the prisoners and recovery of sight for the blind, to set the oppressed free and to proclaim the year of the Lord's favor." Then he rolled up the scroll, gave it back to the attendant, and sat down. The eyes of everyone in the synagogue were fastened on him. He began by saying to them, "Today, this scripture is fulfilled in your hearing."